Badlands. Explain those Badlands. That's a hell of a name.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
The cult of personality. I know your anger, I know your dreams. I've been everything you wanna be. Oh, I'm the cult of personality. Like Mussolini and Kennedy. I'm the cult of personality. The cult of personality. The cult of personality.
Ask not what your country can do for you.
The only thing we have to fear is fear.
Oh, it's when we don't talk about who's going to push the buttons.
No, honestly, this makes me giggle how we just always do the same shit at the same time. It's becoming comical at this point.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Culture of Change on this special GART weekend edition. Paul and I are, as this airs, Paul and I are in Dallas, potentially heading home from Dallas at that point. I don't know. I haven't bought my plane ticket yet, so I don't know when I'm going to be going home. But we wanted to make sure we had a show for you guys, and we have a very exciting show because we're going to be catching up with Chad Stewart, the author and creator of the Britfield universe. Very excited. There's a movie coming. There's a fourth book coming. There's so much to talk about. Fourth book is Britfield and the Eastern Empire, and there's some Russia in there. So we're going to have a really great conversation. Before we do that, let's hit our first couple of sponsors. Paul, do you want to go first with Gold Co? You're muted. You're still muted. And I can't unmute you.
Are you concerned about the $6 trillion at stake in the upcoming 2024 election, friends? The Wall Street Journal has reported a critical issue, the looming decision on extending tax cuts scheduled to expire after 2025. Republicans advocate for extending Trump's tax cuts while the Democrats lean towards letting them expire and increasing taxes on top earners and corporations, potentially creating a massive $6 trillion gap. But fear not, There's a way to protect yourself from this impending threat, my friends. Join the thousands of hardworking Americans who are taking proactive steps towards safeguarding their savings. Visit BadlandsGold.com to claim your free 2024 gold and silver kit and fortify everything you've worked for. You may even qualify for up to 10% back in bonus silver, but hurry, supplies are limited. Don't leave your financial future to chance. Act now to diversify and shield your savings against the uncertainties ahead. Get your free 2024 gold and silver kit today at BadlandsGold.com and take control of your financial destiny. One more time, friends, that's BadlandsGold.com.
I'm excited to announce we're having a huge MyPillow spring sale, and here's a few examples. Buy one of our MyPillow 2.0s, you get another MyPillow 2.0 absolutely free. Made with cooling technology, the best pillow ever just got even better. And this just in, 9 brand new colors and styles of our Percale bed sheets. They're made with the finest long staple cotton, and now you can save 50% or more. That's as low as $24.98. And for the first time this year, I'm bringing you our My Slippers and Sandals for as low as $25 a pair. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to get your MyPillow 2.0s. Buy one, get one free. Percale sheets as low as $24.98. My Slippers and Sandals as low as $25 a pair. And for a limited time, when you order $75 or more, your entire order ships absolutely free.
All right. For the best night's sleep in the whole wide world, visit MyPillow.com and use promo code Badlands and get yourself some gold as well, because, you know, it's good to have a hedge.
Yeah.
All right. So we are getting back into the Britt Field universe. We're going to, kind of recap. We're going to talk about what's coming. It's very, very exciting. Without further ado, let's bring in Mr. Chad Stewart. Welcome so much to the show.
Thank you for having me back.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to hear. So after we had you, we did a couple shows earlier this year on Raising a Nation and here on Culture of Change. And I've had so many members of the Badlands audience say, oh, I got my Britfield books and I'm on book one and book two. My mother famously is like, I don't sleep. I haven't slept in several days because I have to find out what happens to Tom and Sarah. Really great story, good, wholesome story with just packed full of art and culture and architecture and history. And so tell us, take the audit, because there's, you know, possibly many people that missed the first couple shows that we had with you. Let's do kind of a recap of the Britt Field universe and who are Tom and Sarah.
Yeah, just I'll do a quick like 3-4 minute overview, but originally from Newport Beach, California, back east, Wellesley, Massachusetts for 16 years. Did my undergraduate in British literature, European history, postgraduate, and then graduate work, and then was an investment banker. And it was about 12 years ago that I was sent to a boring insurance seminar when I had the idea for Britfield and Lost Crown blossom in my mind. Started with a simple sketch, a doodle, a circle, three lines, basket, boy and a girl. And I wrote The Boy in the Balloon. And I went home that weekend, and on one piece of paper, I just started to outline this story. And at the time I was dying to do something fun and creative. Wasn't thinking anything, you know, as far as a series. And I also wanted to write something that one thing you learn about writing is you write about what you know and you write about what you love. And I lived off and on in England for about 2 years, British literature major. So I wanted to write something kind of fun. And it takes place, book one takes place, Britfield and Lost Crown takes place in Britain in present time, starts up in Yorkshire, Northern England. It's about Tom. He's a 12-year-old orphan. Been an orphan his whole life. He's been at Weatherly Orphanage for 6 miserable years, and this is the year he's going to escape. And we kick it off like that within the first couple pages, so you know where it's going. You know what I mean? You know, like, okay. And but he's not going anywhere without his best friend Sarah. Somewhere along the lines, they commandeer a hot air balloon, and they are chased relentlessly throughout England by the illustrious detective Gowerstone, and they head to Oxford, Windsor, London, and then finally to Canterbury. And so it took me 4 years, 2,500 hours to write book one, Britfield and Lost Crown. It's 384 pages. We officially launched in August 2019. At that time, I started a national school tour. and the elementary and middle schools were always our beachhead. We weren't thinking about retail. We knew retail was like, you know, first or second or third tier. Wanted to take it right to the classrooms, right to the kids. I ended up driving 9,000 miles and visited 23 states, over 200 schools, and presented to more than 40,000 students, made it all the way up to Seattle, all the way over to Chicago, all the way down to New Orleans, and all the way up to Memphis, Tennessee. So it was an incredible tour. We broke it up in sections. We were in Texas for about a month. Actually, it was very interesting. It was in Dallas for at least a couple of weeks and got all the way down to Houston and stuff. So it was a lot of fun. And we came into every school you could imagine, private, public, Christian, Catholic, charter, homeschool, homeschool farms, just incredible. And so it was a great way to gauge it, and we did extremely well. Since then, it's become one of the most awarded books in children's fiction. Our youngest reader, 7, our oldest reader is 93 years old. 55% of our reading audience are adults. And we've had worldwide impact now. And really, we could talk a little bit about this, Ash, but really the last 5 years since we launched it has all been a soft launch. It's all been in preparation for, frankly, this year. And this is the year we're going global. And you're looking probably within the next 2 to 3 weeks, you're going to see a tidal wave come across the nation and globally. And we could talk about that. So we're very excited, but it takes a long time to build the infrastructure. So we launched book one, and then book one, present time, Thomas Eyre 12, takes place in England. Book two, we launched in July 2021, and it's called Britfield and the Rise of the Lion. It takes place in France. And now Thomas Eyre, 13 years old, that's 474 pages. And then 2 years ago, September 2022, we launched Britfield and Return of the Prince, 575 pages, takes place in Italy. And so it really is a 7-book series, worldwide tour, an adventure, if you will. And it's got this whole royal mystery. Who are the Britfields? How do they tie in to the official royal dynasties of England? Who's Tom and how's he connected? And just having a lot of fun. So I'm just about done with book four, Britfield and the Eastern Empire. And we're changing things a bit now. I'm trying to keep everything right around 450 pages. And we're also actually including a lot more countries. We've got 10 countries represented in book four. Wow. And then 5 will be Asia, and we'll probably have 6 or 7 countries. It'll start in South Korea. And then book 6 will be South America, and then book 7 will be United States. And at that point, Tom and Sarah are 18. And it was always going to be 7 books, but I do now have an idea for book 8.
Oh, I love it. So I think one thing for like I said, a lot of our audience has picked up the books and read them. But if you haven't, first of all, you know, you said middle school is the target audience. Adults love these books. So, you know, don't let that turn you off if you're watching, and certainly get them for your, you know, middle school aged kids and grandkids.
Well, it really is. Let me just interject it. I mean, it's as they grow in age, because they go from 13 to 14. And so book two is really our shift into young adult. And then, you know, by book four, they're now 15 years old. And so now you're kind of into that, those like late teens and stuff. But like I said, adults love them. Kids love them. It really covers the whole gamut. And much like C.S. Lewis, the whole Narnia series wasn't for kids. It was actually written for adults. And I think I feel so much that that's what I've been doing with Britfield Lost Crown. I'm just writing the type of books I would want to read. Books that are fun, exciting, educational, exciting, and yet they're based on family, friendship, loyalty, and courage.
Yeah. And what I was saying about, for, you know, just for people's awareness, there is so much history packed into them. The way you paint visuals with your writing is just incredible, because you can see these palaces and cathedrals, and, you know, the London Eye or the Eiffel Tower really comes to life. But then you get the art aspect of it, the history. You're getting so much. The people that read these books, kids in particular, that read these books are going to be kind of leveling up with the amount of real world, you know, history, culture, art, architecture, all of those things, and inspire, ignite the creativity and the desire to really see those things and to, you know, engage outside of pop culture and reacting to what the latest trend is from pop culture. I think these books really take kids out of that. You know, I devoured books when I was a kid, but the ones that I still remember are the ones where you're, you know, transported into this universe. And what's cool about the Britfield universe is that it's the real world. You know, it's not, you're not in some fantasy land. There's no, you know, witches and, well, I mean, there's, you know, Luciferians, I would argue. You don't call them the that's my word, not yours. But the reason I love and we will continue to have you on and to cover, you know, cover these books as they come out in the movie, which we'll talk about here in a few minutes, is that it's perfect for Culture of Change because you explore the corporate interests and the government interests and the shadow secret society interests and the, you know, monarchies and all of that. And it's a little close for comfort sometimes as you're reading what's going on in the books. But it's such a perfect fit for this show because we explore those real world structures every week on Culture of Change. And reading the Britfield books for me was like, you know, brought to life with you said exciting adventure. They really are thrillers. You can't, you know, everybody that I've talked to that's read these books, you can't put it down. You have to know what happens. You just have to keep going and figure out what happens. I'm excited, very much excited to get into to the Russia question. Let me interject
real quick because it just popped in my mind. But 2 days ago, we were doing I was doing an hour and a half Q&A session with a group called the Heritage Girls. It's the opposite of the Girl Scouts, where the Girl Scouts, you know, 25 years ago started going off the reservation. The Heritage Girls is sort of a conservative, almost faith-based group. And they're about 100,000 members worldwide. And so there was a group in Virginia, and they've all read the books. And Pamela was the woman, and we've been in correspondence. And so it was so cool. For an hour and a half, literally, like, and I'll be there for 30 minutes. I'll be there for as long as I need it to be. And questions kept coming in. But one question was, are the secret societies real? And I had to sit there and say, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
I said, pretty much everything that's in the books is real. And it was just like cool to get that kind of question from a 13-year-old, you know,
yeah.
But it's like, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, like some that I've met and talked to really get it. They get the committee behind the scenes, the shadow government, they really get it. And then others just are enjoying the story, which is great. You know what I mean? It's just, but subconsciously they're getting it. Cause the point is the truth is like a double-edged sword and it will never come back void. Right. Yeah. And so that truth in every single book is resonating and sinking in to the readers. And so that's kind of exciting, but go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about book four, but you have a movie coming out is it just book one that the first?
So I think I've showed this before, but here's our finished third draft script. So that's kind of exciting. We just did a read through about 3 weeks ago because I can't remember if I talked about it. So it was our first professional read through. We had 12 actors, six adults, six children, and a Tom and a Sarah. And it was a big boardroom, long table. My producer and myself were kind of at the back end, just literally walking through it. So it's very, very cool. It's kind of the next step forward to hear it. And we recorded it and we would read about 30 pages, take a break, get feedback. But it was amazing. And so probably about another like 80 little knickknacks, you know, through the script. So now it's just beautiful. It's polished. I spoke with him yesterday for an hour. So we're very excited as we are sort of really shifting now into pre-production. And so in the next like 4 to 6 weeks, we'll be shifting into pre-production. We've already got our sort of ideal cast list and directors we're looking at. So I would say within the next probably 2 months, you'll start to see a tremendous amount of buzz starting to build around the Britfield movie. And it's going to be 7 movies, 7 books. I will start writing the script for book 2, Britfield and the Rise of the Lion, in January, February of next year. And so the idea is it's taken a long time to get everything, if you will, to the public, to the screen. But after that, it's every 18 months, ideally, that you'll get the next movie and the next movie and the next movie. And we have an 18-month, multi-million-dollar global marketing campaign prepared for the movie. And we're going to cause a buzz that you've never seen the likes of. So,
one thing I wanted to throw out there, Ash, you had talked about it a few moments ago with the history that you put into your books, Chad, and how it's all coming from a real place and it's all real and it's not fictional. What I love about it, about your writings, is that, you know, they're obviously children's books, but they're written in such an intelligent way that it's like the children who are reading them, Ash, you nailed it, they're getting a history lesson and an intelligence lesson. It's not the dumbed down, simple reading of children's books you see today. And I remember as a kid, that was one thing that I really was drawn to about C.S. Lewis's stuff and Lord of the Rings as well was that you're reading it, but even as an 8, 9, 10-year-old reading this stuff, you just feel smarter for being able to read it, right? That's the same vibe I get from your stuff. So not only is your book this wonderful kind of fantastical story set in a real world derived from real stuff and facts, but it's helping kids to learn, and it's not keeping them simple and dumb. Like, that's one of my favorite things about your stuff, man, is you're opening them up not just to being creative and having an imagination and thinking outside the box, but you're keeping them based in reality while doing it. And that's fantastic, man. I love it.
Appreciate that. Thank you. And I do. I work very hard at the vocabulary. It's like, you know, it's funny. I mean, it's just like sometimes you'll spend 15. There was a great comment by Hemingway that said, this morning I spent the entire morning figuring out if I was going to put a comma in or take it out. And I just feel like sometimes when I'm editing, I'm like that. Like, and you find that perfect vocabulary word, you're like, yes, that's the verb. You know what I mean? Like, because I really do. I try to have a lot of variety. Even more so with book four, I will literally do a word search. I'm like, I'm already about 90,000 words in, you know, on book four. And I'll do, have I used that word yet? You know, and then I'll do a word search. And I'm like, oh, I used it, but at the beginning and stuff. So I do spend a lot of time. I have a whole sheet. Adjectives and adverbs and things like that. So I really try to get that flavor in there. But with that said, I don't bring in words that you've never heard of. And I know that some writers do that. I remember reading the autobiography on Hamilton. It's an 800-page biography on Alexander Hamilton. It's a couple of years ago. And that's like, he's like bringing these words in. It's just like, what the, you know, what is that? Like I've never heard that. And he's trying to be all cool. And like, so, you know, I'm very articulate. I'm a great writer. I'm like, no, you're bogging it down. It's hard to read. We don't use this kind of language and stuff. So I think there's a balance between that. But I appreciate that because I remember when book one came out, you know, like some of the first feedback from an industry that doesn't know anything about the industry they're in, meaning the publishing industry and agents, they're like, oh my gosh, it's so many pages. And it's like, you know, it's 400 pages. And I'm like, I'm sorry. Have you not seen Harry Potter?
Right. Yeah. It's like,
have you been to a bookstore? Like, yeah.
It's like Peter Jackson gets done with the first Lord of the Rings and they're like, oh my God, the first cut's 4.5 hours long. He's like, have you read the book? Yeah. Like, you're lucky it's only 4.5 hours long.
Like, well, and sorry, go ahead, Paul.
I hate that when people, oh, it's too long. No, it's not. It's a creative vision that needs to be fulfilled. I'm not going to chop it short so you can cut 20 minutes off your day reading it. Sorry. I get the same way with my videos, man. I totally get it. Like I'll spend that like hours and hours and hours looking for one transition that's going to last maybe a second on screen. And then I'll find the transition and then you tweak it for hours and hours and hours more. Ash is full well aware of how I get lost in video editing. It's insane, man.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say on the page limit thing, you know, fine for agents and, you know, if the audience doesn't think they're long enough. I'll give you that because they fly by when you're reading them. And I'm now at the point where I'm waiting for the new books to come out. So I wouldn't mind if they were longer.
But back to the authenticity, and we can talk a lot about that. Cause like I just finished with the Hermitage in St. Petersburg, Russia. And that used to be the winter palace for the czars, Peter the Great. And then Catherine the Great was the one that was the big art purchaser. In fact, at one time, the Hermitage, which is now a museum, and it's probably the most beautiful, stunning museum you've seen ever. And I've been to all the big ones throughout the world. And this one just blows your mind. And it's like, the difference is you'll walk into a museum and you'll have like one room and you might have like maybe two or three Rembrandts, which would be a lot. This, you'll walk in and it's an entire room of Rembrandts, you know, and at one time they had 42 Rembrandt paintings and stuff. You'll walk into like another museum and you'll see maybe two Renoirs and you walk there and they got a whole room of it. So I just finished, like, that was a very long, hard scene to write. I mean, as a footnote, they're breaking into the Hermitage just to take back a Britfield artifact. I'll leave it there. And so it's about a 20-page scene from sort of entering in and then going through it and stuff, because there's just so much to describe. And I'm pulling up pictures and I'm looking at artwork and it's hard too, because it's like, it's not an art book. You know, it's not a history book. So I'm trying to sprinkle it in there to give you, the reader, a really good feel of what it's like and just the grandeur of the rooms and the high ceilings. And just, I mean, it's incredible. When I was there and I mean, years ago when I toured it, it was just like, I mean, it was just saturation. I mean, it was just so amazing. It's a little bit like the Vatican,
That's what I was going to say. When you wrote them, because for folks who haven't read in the third book, it doesn't spoil, I don't think, the story, but they break into the Vatican, essentially a part of the Vatican, and the suspense and then it's the suspense while you're describing, you know, kind of the grandeur of the above ground Vatican and then kind of the mystery of the below ground parts of the Vatican, but you, the reader, are right there with them. So having that same experience in the museum in Russia is going to be exciting.
Yeah, it's cool too, because you're always challenged, like, what do you do now and how do I come up with something new? And it was great when you get those breakthroughs. I remember taking a nap one day and figuring out, because they end up in St. Petersburg and then they meet with this professor at the University of St. Petersburg. It's really cool. And I always like to bring in that sort of professor, that college where they have the discussions and come back and forth, if you will, you sort of see those themes and stuff. And finally I'm like, that's it. You know, old architectural plans with hidden hallways throughout the entire Hermitage.
I love hidden hallways.
Yeah, right. And it's like, and then, because I'm so fresh from it, because I just came off the editing part of it. But it's like, so what do they look like, and what happens in there? And it's like, is the floor weak, and could it break through? And if it breaks through, what's underneath? And then there's like peepholes, right? Because of course the royalty would be, you know, using these peepholes to spy on their guests and stuff. And so, you know, we just have a lot of, and then cobwebs everywhere and stuff, rusted nails, you know, and then suddenly a corridor that's supposed to continue on is blocked off. And what do they do? And so, yeah, so I have a lot of fun with it. So,
yeah. So I want to come back and talk about that. Kind of feels a little, the spying, the peepholes and the spying feels a little ripped from the headlines right now with what's going on in the world. But before we dig into that, let's talk about our next great sponsor in the show, Loaded Gun Coffee. Wake up to the bold flavors of Loaded Gun Coffee, where passion, precision, and patriotism infuse every sip. As a veteran-owned business, we ensure each cup is steeped in pride and unwavering commitment. Our roasters handpick the finest coffee beans from around the world and have mastered unique brewing methods. Our skilled farmers cultivate the coffee to embody the essence of duty and honor in every meticulously crafted blend. But it's more than just coffee. It's a family's enduring commitment to freedom, with military veterans tracing their legacy back to the Civil War, including Purple Heart recipients. Loaded Gun Coffee is a brewed testament of pride and honor. Dedicated to preserving the integrity and strength of our beloved nation, we proudly stand as fierce advocates for a secure border and a strong America. And we stay loaded. Stay loaded, Badlanders, with Loaded Gun Coffee. Visit badlandsmedia.tv/loaded and enter promo code Badlands for 10% off your purchase. That's badlandsmedia.tv/loaded, promo code Badlands. And then we're going to talk about aero tags. Are you tired of the endless cycle of buying and tossing those paper tree air fresheners? Enter AeroTags, where their dream was to craft a solution to this very problem. AeroTags are the first ever laser engraved, rescentable car air fresheners made right here in the USA. Born in the makerspace of the Cleveland Public Library, AeroTags is not just a business, it's a revolution, a testament to the American dream. They are not just about freshening your space, but about doing it better, with a commitment to longevity, aesthetics, and sustainability. AeroTags are designed to last longer, look great, and reduce waste, replacing those fleeting scents with something you can count on. Don't forget to grab your Badlands Media AeroTag, now available. You can see mine behind me when the video stops playing. It makes my space smell like pine, and it's amazing. Visit badlandsmedia.tv/aerotags. That's AeroTags. And use promo code Badlands for 10% off your order. That's badlandsmedia.tv/aerotags, promo code Badlands. And I've got my Badlands Media AeroTag right here. They're beautiful. They're well made. They don't wear out. You just add a few more drops of oil to them when you need to freshen up the scent. So everybody check that out. badlandsmedia.tv/aerotags. All right. So you mentioned there's underground hallways, there's peepholes, and it kind of just, you know, like it triggered the fact that the blackmail economy among the elites seems to be something that's very much coming into focus right now. You know, we've all kind of known about Jeffrey Epstein and the island and the plane rides and all of that kind of stuff. But now we have P. Diddy coming into focus and all of the different ways that, you know, people get compromised. We see this in every industry. We see it with politicians. We see it with people in, you know, positions of power and people used to entertain the masses. Certainly in the case of the hip hop industry, what you've obviously been writing, you know, this book for a long time, but do you intend to have so many of your details ripped from the headlines? Because this feels like, pretty, you know, kind of goes along with, we're talking about ancient blackmail economies. There really is nothing new under the sun, right?
That was my phrase. I was going to say that there's nothing new under the sun. Yeah. I mean, nothing really has changed and stuff. And I think what's great is, you know, I've done all my research for the last 12 years. And I always say relearning history and finding out, you know, pulling the curtain, finding out really what's going on and the real history and stuff. And so it all blends in beautifully. Like, I'm not trying to force it into the story, but what's so great about the Britfield series is that it's current time. And so, and you're talking about, you know, the Britfields, which is this sort of honest royal bloodline, family line that's good. And then the cabal, if you will, the committee that's behind it, has been behind everything for centuries, that wants to, you know, exterminate, extinguish, kill, and murder. And so it's a great storyline, but it works beautifully because it's real and it ties into everything that we're doing right now. I mean, one of the main themes in the book four is there's a crisis there's a clock ticking, a crisis that's about to happen. And they're going to crash the entire global economy and introduce a worldwide digital currency. And so that thread is coming through it right now.
Ripped from the headlines.
Yeah, so exactly. So it's like, and again, too, I can't help but to write it. It's just, it fits, but I'm doing my research and it's like, you know, I know their playbook, you know, and they're not that intelligent or clever. They're just devious and evil, you know? So, yeah. Anyway.
Absolutely. All right. So getting in a little bit more into book four, but before we move off the movie, is there a target date to release the movie?
Oh, the movie? It's going to be, ideally it would be November or December. I want to say November 2025. So a year from this coming November. Worst scenario, and it's more than likely because everything takes forever. It would be 2026. But the point is it's happening. It's in motion. It's going to be extraordinary. I think we talked a little bit about it before. We talk more about, you know, the film and just its impact. But and I got that. I got chills as I was doing my final edit with the movie script. I mean, I would just come up to moments and it's almost like a God moment, because it's like, you know, there's no way I wrote this stuff. You know what I mean? There's no way that I tied in so many great things and levels. And it's like when you get to Windsor Castle in book one, and it's just like, and you find out, you know, someone isn't who they say they are. And then, oh my God, they're involved. And then all of a sudden it's just like something that's like paradise turns into, you know, a nightmare. And then all of a sudden it's like, they're trying to find Tom and Sarah to get rid of them. And then all of a sudden Gowerstone's arriving with the police department. And it's like, yeah. And then where's Hainsworth? And it's like, you know, layer after layer, after layer, after layer. And it's just like, and yet the story's still continuing and you have no idea where it's going. So it's just exciting to sort of write that out. I know with book four, I mentioned before, I spent just 4 months outlining book four. In fact, this is what my outline looks like. This is 4 months worth of work. So this is just, you know, scene by scene, and every single scene is there for a reason, ties in, makes sense. It's all been developed. So like I've got 80 scenes for book four, and that hasn't really changed. I've consolidated a few things and a couple things I didn't need and stuff, but pretty much the entire way I laid it out, it's based on a movie script, frankly. It's a three act structure. I do different things now. Instead of having plot point one, I'll have plot point 1A, plot point 1B, plot point 2A, B, and C, midpoint, you know, something right there at midpoint, huge revelation, huge turn. So it is very well written in that sense, if you will. And it's very intentional. And so I always enter late. I always leave early. Right. And so it's like you start on the action, you leave on the action. I break up the scenes nicely. I've got a lot of different threads, a lot of different layers. Great development with the characters. I spent like 3 or 4 weeks just on doing their bios again. You know, like Tom, what's his strengths? What's his weaknesses? What does he fear the most? What's a secret that he's keeping? And I didn't always have the answer. I'm like, I don't know, you know, and I go on to the next one or something. But I love that idea. It's like, what are they holding back? What's something that would be a huge revelation? Book four is going to blow your mind because we've known something happened to Sarah's parents, mm-hmm. you know, in Scotland. They're killed in an automobile accident. We weren't quite sure what. And there's always been that thread, that suspicion. And what do you find out in book four? It's like, whoa.
There's definitely undertones of I don't want to spoil any plot points, but undertones of where does she fit, right? There's a couple different ways that the reader can kind of see, and certainly towards the end of book three, you're hinting in some directions of which way that goes. So that's pretty exciting. You mentioned in book four that, and before I ask the question, I'm going to ask another one. I think the last time you were here, you said you believed that book four was going to be out in September. Is that still?
Oh, yeah, yeah. September this year. Yeah, awesome. I think we're still on track, so we're good. And I was just talking with my graphic designer that did the covers for two and three. I love the one for three. Yeah. It's just so cool. I was talking with her this week, and we were hashing out the cover for book four. And so I'm very excited. I had an idea, and I couldn't quite get it. And we were spending about an hour on the phone, and boy, she just gets it. I'm like, you're awesome. Like, she's like early morning light coming through the window, frost on the glass. I'm like, hello. Like, it's just like they're around a table, but there's a silhouette, so you don't quite see their face. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, thank you. So yeah, that's cool.
Perfect. So at the end of book three, we get, you know, we see a glimpse of Russia. As you mentioned, there's some scenes in St. Petersburg, but you also mentioned that there's a whole bunch of other countries. Can you, what more can you say about kind of
what's happening? Yeah, I don't mind going through it. So it book four, well, we don't want to give it too much away, but book three ends in, we'll just say Austria. And this is 6 months later. And they've been, I love chapter one, it's called Fortress Austria. And they've been stuck in Austria for 6 months because the committee knows they're there, but doesn't know where they're there. So the borders are locked down. I mean, it's just really cool. They're like literally have thousands of agents and military looking, you know, farm by farm, like trying to find them and stuff. So it's cool. So it starts in Austria, Vienna, Austria. And then we go to Bratislava, we go to Prague, just an incredible scene in Prague. We have this really cool Cold War scene in Berlin, where Henry has to go rescue somebody. And then we get up to Krakow, and then Warsaw, Poland, and then the Baltic Ocean. And then we include Lithuania, Estonia. We have a really cool scene in Budapest, Hungary. And then finally, St. Petersburg, Russia, and Moscow, Russia. So it's 10 countries, and it's really, really cool. It's exhausting. It's hard. And because you get to Eastern Europe, and a lot of the towns look the same. I mean, they're all neat and dynamic, but it's just like cobblestone streets, you know, three-story plastered, red-tiled roof. You know what I mean? So it's like you got to sort of bring a flavor into it so you're not being repetitive and stuff, and bring in the grandeur of every town or city that I mentioned. So it's very cool. It's exciting, and it's fast paced. It's a lot more revelations. I loved in three, as you remember, with Kate's sister. I just thought that's one of my favorite scenes, that revelation. If you remember, there's been this hacker out there that's been undermining their work, and all of a sudden you remember she's sitting at the laptop and the picture pops up, and it's just like, and so you have so many things going on now, which is cool. And you don't want to overcrowd your scene. Someone was asking me in those questions, so are you going to bring back Hainsworth, Professor Hainsworth? You know what I mean? And like, I plan on doing something cool with him, but it's too many cooks in the kitchen. It's like, I've got Gowerstone, I've got Fontaine, I've got Tom, Sarah, Hunter, I've got Oliver, Kate, Henry, you know, Alistair. It's like you have so many characters, and if you're going to have them, you got to use them. But it's a lot of balancing acts. But there's just so many dynamics that are cool. Like you got the revelation in book three about Sebastian and Gowerstone. I mean, how cool was that, right? And so we're playing on that. And then Kate was, you know, Elizabeth, Kate's sister, was arrested, you know. And so now we return to that. I've got a scene that is so awesome for that. You know what I mean? She's just, and then all of a sudden, like, Oliver's mom, and I've got an unbelievable, wonderful scene that I'm going to be writing next week with that. And so, you know, because like now the father's been removed, Oliver's father's been removed, but she's really actually a bloodline, and her position's been elevated. And, you know, it's like poor Oliver, you know what I mean? So you got all these dynamics going on. You got relationships, character development, you've got romance between, go ahead.
I got a question for you, man. So when you, when the idea burst in your head for this entire series and you knew that you were going to write books off of it, how much of where the series has went and where it's going is predetermined versus how much of it was kind of open-ended and you'd be writing and then another idea would come along that you'd then insert into the story, or a new character would pop into your head that you'd have to build a storyline or a plot around? How fluid was that in the creative and the writing process?
Yeah, because people always ask me, you know, like, how does it end? Although I would never say. And or what are you going to be doing in book 4 or 5 and stuff? And so, yeah, I take it book by book. And so when I did finish book one, and when I started book one, I thought only one book. And when I finished, I thought 3 books. I thought I got a series here. I definitely wanted to do England, France, and Italy. But I never have much more than a slight thread to the next book. I'm getting better at it now because the stories are developing and the characters are developing. And so, like, I have stuff that I wanted to do in book 4, but I'm like, nah, I can't get it in there. And so, like, I'm rolling that over into book 5, which is kind of cool because you don't want to force too much stuff into it. I mean, there's a whole thing with Fontaine, and I mentioned it in book 2, and she's got 3 brothers, and there's going to be something very interesting to bring in that. You know what I mean? So, so I'll be bringing that back into book 5. And I just love that constant conflict, you know, between relatives, relationships, and family, and relationships, and it's all in there, and it's heavy
because it's very real. We've all dealt with that in this. We've all dealt with conflicts and relationships falling apart and friendships falling apart, and a lot of it because of what we believe in or what we're fighting for, the truth that we're fighting for. So it's, again, another element in your book that's very, very real, which makes it that make them so relatable. Like they really are.
But to further answer your question, so like I didn't know much more about book 4 when I started. I knew where it was going to start, and I knew where it was going to end, which is good, bookends. But when I started outlining it, you know, four months of that, it's when I start to hash out the scenes and brainstorm. But even with that said, you know, all I have is, like, I know there's going to be a scene in Prague, and they're going to break into the castle, but that's all I've got. You know what I mean? And so, like, you know, when I finally get to that scene, I got to figure out, all right, so where does this start and how are they going to get in there? And I think that's a lot of the fun that I have with it. I mean, it's fiction and it's a fun adventure series, but I really do try to make it extremely realistic. I'm pulling up the stuff I have to pull up online all the time with, like, infrared glasses. And what was I doing the other day? Like, oh, sensors and, like, heat sensors. And how much of a degree of heat will they be activated and stuff, like in a museum? I mean, that kind of stuff, you know what I mean? Like alarm systems and cables. And so, like, and I don't drown it out with details. I just make it real. You know what I mean? Cause it's like a lot of people get like a paragraph in there and it's just like, well, it's not a how-to book. You know what I mean? Like, but I do try to keep it very authentic and realistic. And could this actually happen? And could, you know, and I'm suspending it a little bit with these kids, but they're not normal kids, you know, and 2.5 years later now from book 1, they've gone through a lot of stuff. They've learned a lot of stuff. They're well-trained now. And we got a sense of that in book 3 when they were at Devonbury Academy for a year, you know, with Fontaine, and they were getting training and stuff like that. And, but yet they're still 14 in book 3. And that's, and you can appreciate this, Ash. That's what I love about book 3 is, like, they keep trying to venture on their own, but they keep getting in trouble. You know what I mean? Like, it's so typical of 14 years, like, we can take over now. We'll do it. We'll figure it out. And then, like, they set off the alarm in that museum, or they get caught and they got to get bailed out. You know what I mean? And I just love that because that's like, they don't have all the answers, and they, you know, they always need help. And we all do, you know, but they're growing, and they're trying to take a little more, you know, and like the whole, one of the major themes in book 4 is consequences, choices. Mm. The choices you make have consequences, good and bad. And that's been this thread that I'm kind of running through book 4. You know, they might do something that seems like the right idea, and then this is what happens, and it costs this and stuff. And so there's a lot of great stuff in there. So
Yeah, I do think you have you've got them nailed from an age standpoint, because I, you know, I have three teenagers, and so when they're, you know, in the orphanage and the choices that they're making as a mom, I'm like, no, that's not like, well, I guess that's the only thing we can do about it. And it's like the most radical answer to the question, right? And it's like, no, that's not the most. That's not what you have to do. But they're, you know, 12-year-olds, and it totally makes sense. And you see them grow through the choices. They do want to be more independent. And after what they've been through, they certainly feel like they can be, right? By book three, you, as a mother, I want to wring both of their necks. And like I said, the suspense, book three is where the Vatican is, and the just the suspense of it is really, really well done.
I remember being like 10, 11 years old, man. We grew up in a neighborhood that had a fair amount of woods and like a creek going through the woods. And I one day in the middle of the summer, I'm like, I'll be back in a bit. I'm going to go creek stomping. And my mom's like, you're going to, you might want to put on some blue jeans. It's like, no, I'll be fine. It's the middle of summer and it's hot. And she's just like, probably put on some jeans, and some good shoes. And I'm like, nah, these beat the hell tennis shoes and shorts will be fine. I come back like 2 hours later with my legs shredded from thorns and briars and all the typical stuff you find in a creek. And it's just so just dead on point to the characters, where it's like, you just, you know, you're teenagers and you're learning and you think you can handle something, you know it all. And then you end up like stepping in it. And I got back home and I was just like, man, I really should have worn some blue jeans. So guess what? Next time I went creek stomping, I wore blue jeans. Like, it's, again, so relatable, man. So relatable.
And I'm very sensitive to that, and especially in four, that the choices they are making are causing problems. You know what I mean? They're willing to risk it, but they're not just risking themselves. They're risking everyone around them that's protecting them. You know what I mean? And they're paying those consequences. And it's a good moral lesson, if you will, but it's realistic, you know. But to come back, to fast forward, it's like I'm in the Hermitage and there's this great scene, and like everything's gone wrong and there's no way out, really. And again, I'm trying to be realistic to it. So I kind of wrote myself into a corner and I laid down, took a nap, and I'm like, that's it. And so I got this great answer. I don't want to give anything away, but it's so cool. But again, it's where they get, if you will, bailed out. You know what I mean? And because it's like they got themselves into a mess. They can't get themselves out of a mess. And if it wasn't for others, they'd be arrested. So, yeah.
Mm. Oh, well, that's very exciting. And no more spoilers for book four, because I'm very excited to read book four. We have a few minutes left. I want to ask you more broadly about your Britfield Institute and the work that you guys are doing, the opportunities you're exploring. Talk a little bit about the Britfield Institute and the work you do.
Yeah, it's really sort of our nonprofit arm, and the only reason it was a nonprofit was because it just sort of had to be set up that way, and it's really been funded through myself and the company, so we don't have any outside funding for it. But the whole intention of it is really to bring creativity back to the classroom, specifically throughout the United States, and specifically to Title I schools. And just offer them, programs that they could never get. And so we're not asking for anything, we're just giving it. And so whether it's a writing workshop for an hour, 3 hours, or 5 hours with a group of kids or entire, you know, fifth grade or something like that, do virtual. Although we do have big plans where we're going to do a lot of things where we'll have teams that come in and do stuff too with them. But our whole push for it, our focus with Britfield has always been, my beachhead has always been elementary and middle schools, you know, the next generation of children. So while everyone else is chasing after rainbows, you know, and politics and this and you know, 31 flavors of the recent crap that's going on, and it's relevant, don't get me wrong, I'm anchored in our next generation of kids. And it's just like, right now the school systems are giving them a fish for the day and the fish is crap. I'm teaching them how to fish. I'm teaching them how to think creativity, how to think critically, how to communicate. How to use critical thinking. And so creativity is the number one most important skill set in the world. So that's what we're trying to instill in the next generation of kids through the Institute. And so it's good. It's writing workshops, it's creativity workshops, entrepreneur workshops. I love the idea of having 12 or 13 year olds starting their own company. You know, and even if it's just in theory or a business plan, and of course it's not a 50 page business plan, it might be a 7 page business plan. But absolutely. Are you kidding me? Why not? Get them thinking about marketing a product, inventing a product, How would you market it? Putting them into teams and stuff. So we've done some of this work, and we plan to expand it, you know, nationwide at some point. Yeah, go ahead.
It kind of sounds to me like you guys are giving children the education that our public schools stopped giving them decades ago, like teaching them the skills and the things you actually need to be a successful adult. And not just that, but a happy adult in this world. Yeah. Like, you're not teaching them about race baiting and woke nonsense. You're actually teaching them valuable skills toward becoming valuable human beings. I respect that so much. That's exactly what folks like you and you that have been blessed with your position to be able to write these books and influence people and impact people and inspire people. It's exactly how you should give back and help people along. I just can't commend you enough for that, man. That is fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, the whole idea too, with like the Britfield series is instead of complaining and whining about how bad literature is by today's standard, I mean, witchcraft, occultism, you know, superheroes, demigods, which is just saturating the market. And it's doing two things. And I've said it before, disconnects kids from reality and makes them feel less than they are. You know, if I just had superpowers, you do actually have superpowers. You're amazing. You're a gift of God. You're born creative. You're born unique. You have talents. You have a reason to be alive in this world. You're going to contribute something extraordinary to this world. I don't care what your background is. I don't care any of that. Most of that genetic stuff is all crap anyway. Pseudoscience. We all know the truth, put it that way. So it's like you give them a book like Britfield and it's like you're feeding their soul and you're giving them real things and you're treating them like an adult, right? Or you're not speaking down to them. You're bringing them up. You know what I mean? Like you said, with like Lewis, it's like they bring you up to that level and you're like, wow, I just read a Lewis book. I just read Tolkien, you know?
Right.
And that's what we're doing with it. And so we're doing that. So they go back and they start to read something like Harry Potter and it becomes silly. And I'm starting to see that. And that really actually has been kind of one of our strategies is, you know, it's like I can keep giving you McDonald's and you're going to poison your system and you're going to die. Or I could get you going on some really good fruit over here and nice salad and some good meat and, you know, really good food and feed your body and nourish it. And you actually start, you know, getting energy and and then you go back and you eat McDonald's and you're like, ugh, I can't eat that anymore. Right. Right. And that's what we're doing with Britfield. It's just like, we're sort of purifying your system. You know, we're giving you a taste of like real good, pure water. And then you go back and you start reading this other stuff and it seems kind of, you start to see it for what it is. Yeah. And it doesn't stick as much anymore. And I'm seeing that. I'm seeing that from the feedback from kids. And it's just like, I used to love that series and I don't like it anymore. It's like, it's not as interesting. Or it's like, you know, Tom didn't have a wand, or Sarah didn't have a magic cloak, or, you know, they didn't have superpowers, and yet they had to figure out how to get out of this. And, you know, and it's real, and I can relate to that. And we're writing books that kids and adults can relate to, you know,
and instilling things they're going to want to see and places they're going to want to go, historical ideas that they, as Paul said, might not be getting in the public school system. Yeah. And certainly in public school, we get social studies now. We don't really get deep history in the way that, you know, we did even a few generations ago. And so that I think is what I was most impressed with by these books is how much you pack into them from a cultural standpoint. Arts, architecture, sciences are in there, advanced technologies are in there, plus all of the history and the character development is there, and the story is really good. And you're, you know, in the book and you've crafted them in such a way, but it's not, you know, as you guys are talking about, it's not silly nonsense. It's not witchcraft. You don't have to, imagine this alternate universe. It's our universe. It's our, you know, it's modern. It's the modern world. And you've just done such an incredible job in bringing that to life. And I think for kids, it really is. You know, I said it earlier, but I think it works. They're going to level up. Kids that read these books and engage in this content, they're going to want to go see these places in France and England and Moscow and Poland and, you know, everywhere that you're going. They're going to want to go experience in these places. And, you know, I mean, at least in theory, they can, you know. Who knows what's going to happen with World War, you know, III and all of the different theaters of war. But, the, you know, these are...
Hey, it, don't...
igniting in kids' minds that there's a much bigger world out there than the pop culture that's being shoved in their face on the screen all the time.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was about to say. Is like when I was a kid, the thing that really broke my creative mind open was reading the stuff like Lord of the Rings and C.S. Lewis and Star Wars. Of course, everybody knows I'm a Star Wars geek, and it's that stuff that unleashed the creativity that is ultimately what's putting a roof over my head right now, from the article writing to the video editing to the shows to everything. It's Chad, you nailed it when you said like creativity is like the thing every human being needs. And if creativity to me kind of falls right in line with hope and faith too, you can keep building on that optimism and that foundation and just keep creating things from a good place. And it just, the way I've seen that kind of stuff spiderweb in my life, when you put out a good signal to people, it just grows in the best possible way. And creativity is like that thing. I meant to say that after you said it, man, but it slipped my mind. But that is like the thing to me, is like creativity is, you've got to enhance that in a child and bring that up in them. You can't beat it down in them and suppress it. And that's what public school does. That's what all this modern literature and modern stuff, like you brought up Harry Potter, and of course, wildly successful books and movies. And but go read those books and watch those movies, and then go read Lord of the Rings and watch those movies. Tell me which one makes your soul feel better and more optimistic and more faithful when you're done watching them. Pro tip, it's going to be Lord of the Rings. But you know, it's just, you're right, because I remember before I fully got this awakening up on me and found my spiritual center again and found Christ again and kind of started seeing through the veil even more, I liked Harry Potter. I thought they were, oh, these are cool movies, I'll watch them. But then you go back and watch them now and I'm like, these are sillier than shit. I'm yeah. going to go watch Lord of the Rings, like it's, or I'm going to go read a good book. Like they're just silly. Now I'll give her credit for all the shit she's been slinging toward Scottish officials and the transgender stuff over there. But her books, they fall short for me now that I've got older, wiser, more enlightened eyes, man. It's just silly. You nailed it perfectly. Silly.
I kind of saw that myself too. Cause like, you know, they play the movies, you know, like continuously, and I don't watch normal TV, but every now and then you just pop it on, you know, you're having a sandwich or something, you just want to chill out for like 10 minutes or something, and you'll start watching one, and it was like, I remember like 3 or 4 months ago I was just watching, and it just appeared so silly, you know what I mean? It didn't have that sticking power. It never really did with me, but I did read all her books because I had to. And when I say her, the people that put them together, that's a whole other story. She's just another actress, just like Facebook and all of them. They're just actors. But yeah, so it's just like, so I read through them and it's like, you know, they are extremely well written. They use incredible vocabulary and it's amazing. And they're, and as a story, it's very interesting and fun and exciting. So you can see why kids get, you know, drawn into it. And of course they do. And it's like, but it's the number one goal of those is to put witchcraft and black magic in the hearts and minds of children worldwide. And they've done it. Mm. Witchcraft is the fastest growing religion worldwide. Yeah. Right. And it's dark and it's nasty and it's sick.
Of course, and the ultimate message in those was that, hey, you've got to have darkness in you in order to win. Like, because Harry ultimately had a little bit of Voldemort in him. And it's like, I don't get down with that. That's, you know, the whole witchcraft angle and the popularizing. And of course, in those, I did some Harry Potter stuff in one of my predictive programming articles that me and Ash went over, and the hidden visual cues in the movies that lean towards sex and things like that, and then the Death Eaters and their logo and all that. The symbolism is so rich in those movies, it's almost impossible to, like, even asleep people, you can show them that stuff in the Harry Potter movies and they're like, what? And it's obvious what the purpose of it. And of course they come out of nowhere and they blow up all over the place and they become big. Oh, come on, man. You got to know an agenda when you see it pushed, and the age range it was geared toward. How many of those kids now are these witchcraft occultists that deny and attack Jesus Christ and their creator?
All right. Well, Chad, thank you so much for coming back and for sharing, you know, what's coming with book 4 and with the film. So we've got book 4 probably likely September of this year. And then the book 1 movie is late 2024, possibly, or late 2025, possibly 2026. I'll give you the last word before we get out of here.
Yeah, kind of exciting too. We're just about to sign a contract with a major global, someone that we're about to sell the global audio rights to the series. And because a lot of people asked about book 2 and 3, in the rest of the series. So that's going to be, that's happening. We're just about to sign with a major publisher in South Korea. So the whole Britfield series will not only be in Korean, but once we lock in, that's our beachhead. South Korea has always been our beachhead for Asia. We'll lock in the other seven countries in Asia. Well, seven countries of Asia. So that's huge. And then Poland was our first. We got all three books now published in Polish. And Poland's our beachhead for Eastern Europe and stuff. We got a big Eastern Europe tour planned. We got a big European tour planned, Britain tour. So lots of things happening.
Very cool. Well, thank you again so much for being with us. For the audience, it's Britfield.com. Is that right?
Oh yeah. If you want to, if you actually want to get signed books, go to Britfield.com, B-R-I-T-F-I-E-L-D, Britfield.com. That's our award-winning website. Very cool. And we're still signing books. That's not going to last much longer. We're just going to be, I'm running out of time. But I still enjoy doing that. And so it's fun.
I picture you eventually getting to a point like Jerry Seinfeld, that episode where you had to sign all those damn checks for royalties from the show in Japan. Like, your hand's going to start cramping. You're going to be walking around like this from all the books you're going to have to sign, man. Like, I see this thing just completely blowing up in the best possible way. It's the kind of series people need right now, because I mentioned earlier about the things when I was young that brought me to creativity. And there's certainly a void right now for that, for children. This is filling that void. And with the plans you have for it, the optimism and faith you have in it, and the people behind you and the message you're putting out, I have the ultimate belief and faith. This thing's just going to blow up for you, man, in the best way. Like, kids need this.
We're ready. Yeah, the game of attrition is over now. We've been in a very long siege, if you will, building the infrastructure, the soft launch. This is our year of going global, and we're excited. And it's happening now. The transition is in April. So it's actually April 1st is New Year's. As you guys well know, it used to be 13 months, 28 days. That was the godly plan. And so it's kind of fun, because I knew that the first quarter for us was going to be very unique. And I know it's been that way for a lot of people. But it was really cool, because like the last day of April was Resurrection Day, Easter. And then day one, April 1st, is really the new year. And I love that.
Right. Which is, of course, why they made April 1st April Fool's Day, by the way.
Yep. Right. And it's like New Year's on January 1st. It's cold. It's dark. It's miserable. Of course, they do that as New Year's Day. So anyway, so I've been celebrating this week as the new year. So.
I love it.
I'm going to adopt Chad's idea moving forward. I will no longer be celebrating New Year's on January 1st, because I hate January. It's like my least favorite month.
Right?
It is cold and gray.
It's terrible.
Sure.
It's horrible. The only good thing about January is you're in the middle of the hockey season. That's it. Literally. It.
That's true. All right. Well, we are out of time. Chad, thank you so much for being here with us. And we look forward to having you back when there's new developments with the series.
Yes. Love it. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Chad.
All right. So that's the show that we have for you guys. Please do us a favor and hit that thumbs up button. It is the number one metric that we rely upon at Rumble. It ties into a lot of different other metrics that matter to us at Badlands. So it's the number one thing that you can do for us. Doesn't cost you a penny. Helps us out quite a bunch. So please, please, please smash that thumb. Also, if you want to support us, we will, I believe, be tracking the chat and any Rumble rants that come through on this show. We will read on the show at the beginning of next week. We will also read Badlands Boosts at the beginning of next week. You can head over to badlandsmedia.tv/boost and leave us a message there. Leave us a support there, and we will read that at the beginning of next week's show. Helps when you guys support us. It helps keep us on the air and allow us to continue doing this. We really appreciate your support so very much. And this coming week, we will be back to regularly scheduled programming after GART weekend. Kind of always shakes up the schedule at Badlands. So we will see you guys. We'll see you guys next week.
Indeed, man. Hope you guys enjoyed that one. Always love having Chad on, man. Such a great interview. So hope you guys have an awesomely blessed week, and we'll see you next week. Take care, friends.
The test of a man is how much he will bear for a cause which he knows to be right. How long will he stand in the depths of despair? How much will he suffer and fight? There are many to serve when the victory is near, and few are the hurts to be borne. But it calls for a leader of courage to cheer the men in a battle forlorn. It is the way you hold out against odds that are great that proves what your courage is worth. It is the way that you stand to the bruises of fate that shows up your stature and girth. And victory is nothing but proof of your skill, veneered with a glory that's thin. Unless it is a proof of unfaltering will, and unless you have suffered to win.
See the crooks and thieves rioting the renegade streets, working for the devil's deed. The torch of the work is done. I've said I've come to save the weak. The lame man walks, the blind man sees. The inner land, no one's free. They know that the day will come. Shadows rise, step out of the darkness and into the light. Morning light underneath the full moon bright, whiskey and a little moonshine, they dance with the rising sun. The wicked rule in lawless land, wash the blood off from their hands, scheming with the evil plans, but justice soon will come. Wrong is right, no one knows what's black and white, so join the fight.
We've got to run to the trouble, folks. And what is the trouble? The trouble is the Biden administration that is seeking to turn this country into a socialist hellhole. The trouble is Antifa that wants to roam the streets and beat you into submission.
Calling on
afraid. And there ain't no reason to not take the challenge. Get on. Because I'm going to tell you who we come from. We don't come from some weak, jellyback, spineless. That's not who we come from. None of us.
Friends, first off, thank you so very much for joining us. We truly and deeply appreciate your continued support and love shown to us here at Badlands Media. Don't forget to hit the thumbs up on this video and help get this show on the Rumble leaderboard. Another way you can support Badlands for free? Become a Badlander. How do you do that? Head on over to badlandsmedia.tv, click connect from the top menu, and then click be a Badlander. Once you're registered, you can download clips from your favorite Badlands shows to share on your social media accounts. You can also print out flyers and stickers that you can hand out at an event and more. Let's keep growing our community because we are the news now and we take that very seriously. Thank you again from Badlands for your support and your love. It is appreciated more than you know.